Hey, welcome to Your Turn. Mike Causey here, and my guest is Tammy Flanagan. She's well known in the federal community for being an expert, some would say the expert, on federal retirement, all aspects of it. And Tammy is the one that first formulated this idea of a best day to retire, and it turns out there is not necessarily a best day. There are best dates for you. And I've looked at her formula, I've looked at her work, and I decided it's easier to copy her than to try to do it on my own. Tammy, welcome to the show.
Thanks, Mike. It's good to be here. And like you said, that's kind of how we got to know each other, was talking about this best date to retire, because I still remember the day, it was before the internet, that you had left a message on my phone at home. And you said that you had heard the FBI had a magic retirement date, and you wondered if I could explain it to you, because I used to work there.
Yeah.
And that's how we met. And it ended up, the reason why I was a retirement counselor there at the FBI back in the 80s, and we used to encourage our employees to wait until the end of the year to retire, mainly because they could then save up their unused annual leave that last year that they worked, plus whatever they carried over from the year before. And you figure that could be 448 hours of unused annual leave multiplied by your hourly pay rate. That's a cash payment. That's a lump sum payment. Now, the reason why we encouraged that was not just so you can get the cash and go take a vacation or remodel the kitchen, but it was because the Office of Personnel Management back then was taking 2 to 3 months, because we were at that transition FERS was coming in and everything was getting delayed. So it was 2 to 3 months before you got your first check. And we had FBI agents saying, I can't pay my mortgage, without a paycheck for 2 months. So we started telling people, just save up your leave. You'll get that check from us, within 4 to 6 weeks after you retire. And you can live on that while you're waiting, because OPM would then pay them back.
Yeah.
But you can't tell your mortgage company to wait 3 months for the first check.
Yeah, you can't delay meals.
Right. And to this day, that still ends up being a very popular time for people to retire at the end of the year, because you can still take advantage of that lump sum annual leave payment.
You know, I'm thinking of names like Walt Wilson now, way back when, and you were part of that team, but the FBI had an excellent program for helping its employees.
I
understand the DEA is extremely good, and I know people who do things for the CIA, and they say they have an excellent employee information program.
So things have evolved over the years, but there are still some agencies out there who still believe in that individual retirement counseling. Although I know a lot of our listeners are probably saying, well, not where I work, because, they say go to the website and there's the form, do it yourself. So it varies now from place to place. And I think part of that is good and part of it's bad. The bad part is we don't have that touchy-feely, hands-on, come sit and have coffee with me and we'll talk about your retirement. But the good part is anything you want to know about retirement is on the internet.
Yeah.
Between what you write, what I write, what OPM writes, what Social Security has, there's calculators, there's formulas. So it's all out there and you can Google it. So getting information is a lot easier than it used to be.
Well, and correct me if I'm wrong, but there's also the wisdom of the crowd. I know numerous people who have been to retirement seminars and somebody asks a question and it never occurred to them, but they get this thing, or you might have thought it was a dumb question, but somebody's got the nerve to ask it, and it turns out it's critical to your planning.
That's what I love about teaching the seminars, because I think what the comment I get a lot that really makes me feel good was, I thought I knew everything about my retirement, but then you said one thing that made me an extra $100 a month. Like, I had a guy this week who was going over his whole career history. He worked for 3 different agencies, and it was all there, and he was going to retire next year. And then we were going over his retirement application saying, here's what you do here. And one of the questions is, have you performed any honorable active military service? Mm. And I said, well, I checked that. No. Mm-hmm. And he said, wait a minute. He says, no, I was a reservist. Mm-hmm. I said, you were? You never mentioned that. Yeah. It's not in your records.
Yeah.
He goes, I never thought to mention it. It was just 6 months of active duty. Mm-hmm. And then by the time it's said and done, I might have had a year because I was called up. And he said, this was all before I came to work for the government.
Wow.
I was like,
big deal.
Wow, you just made yourself another year of service. That's worth, in his case, FERS 1% of his high 3 by saying, oh, by the way, I served in the military for a year. But he has to pay a deposit for it. So these are the things you learn at a retirement seminar, that how valuable your service is, what do you need to do to get the credit, how much is it worth if you get that credit? There's a lot of important things that can make a difference of having cable TV, maybe.
Absolutely, yeah. Well, I had a friend who worked for the government, and she had, we're talking about her planned retirement date, and she was going to have to either work much longer or put in thousands of dollars, because she left government, had a baby, you know, came back. A lot of people do that. But she was going to have to repay money in order to get a benefit. And I remember talking with John Elliott, also a benefits expert, who's on the show from time to time, about this. And there was a window or something, and I couldn't remember it, but I asked John, I said, would you talk to her? And he did. Mm-hmm. And it turns out she didn't have to repay this money, or she could repay it in small, very small monthly increments from her annuity. She cried. Mm-hmm. She wept because it was that big a deal.
And that's the danger of getting your advice from your coworkers.
Yeah.
Because she might go back to work and say, oh, mm-hmm. I learned this wonderful thing and I don't have to pay that money back. And then she's telling it to someone who is not in that same situation, who would have to pay it back. Otherwise, they lose the service credit. So we do a lot of that myth busting because I think we talked about this hour, that so many laws have changed over the years, and it's always on a date, right? You know, before this date, it's one set of rules, like for her.
Mm-hmm.
But after that date, the rules changed, and now you have to pay it back or else you lose credit for the time. So I always tell federal employees, make sure you understand the source who's giving you that advice. And ask for a reference. You know, if somebody says you don't have to pay it back, say, where does it say that? And could I read about it somewhere? And it's all down in writing. So there's dates that are very important about that.
Yeah. And again, I think going to a seminar with a lot of people is somebody will ask the dumb question you were afraid to ask.
Right.
And it turns out it's not so dumb. It's a lifesaver.
It's universal. Right.
Getting back to the best dates. I know you do this for Government Executive. You write several columns about this, which I read with interest. I guess the most popular month is January, correct?
Or end of December.
End of December, okay.
End of the leave year is what people look at.
Yeah, okay. Mm-hmm. And for its FERS and SERS are slightly different. I mean, one is 1 month and one is the other. How does that work?
Yeah, so let's start with FERS because it's a little easier. And when we talk about FERS, you know, we know it's a three-part system. You have Social Security, TSP, but it's always that foundation of your basic government pension. So your FERS basic benefit is what gives you health benefits and life insurance to take into retirement. So even if you're going to delay Social Security or not take money out of your thrift, you're going to take that government pension. So with that FERS basic benefit, no matter what day of the month you retire, if you're voluntarily retiring, in other words, it's not an early out or you're not mandatory. So if you're voluntarily retiring, I don't care if it's, you know, May 15th or May 31st, your retirement's going to start June 1st.
I see. Okay.
So with FERS, we generally tell people to retire the last day of the month because then June, you become an annuitant. You'll get your first payment July 1st for the month of June. You're good to go. Where if you retired May 15th, your payment, your salary would stop May 15th.
Uh-huh.
And your first retirement check would still be July 1st for the month of June. So you lost half a month of something.
Yeah. Okay.
So FERS, end of the month. I don't care which month, end of the month. With civil service, there's a little quirk in the law. It's still, you know, your retirement begins the first day of the month after you retire, just like FERS. However, civil service law allows you to retire on the first, second, or third day of any month, and you become an annuitant the next day, which means, let's say that we're looking at next year. Let's say in 2017, May 31st, you know, that best day for a FERS employee happens to be a Wednesday. Well, I'm CSRS, so I look at June 1st, 2nd, and 3rd, and I say, wait, whoa, look at this. June 2nd's a Friday. So I could work out the week, get two more days of salary, and because I'm CSRS, I could retire June 2nd, and I'll still get a June retirement check as I went out within the first 3 days of the month. So
yeah,
look at the calendar when you're picking
the
date.
That's a chunk of change, too, isn't it?
Right, and then you could look at a month like September of next year. Next year, September 30th is a Saturday. Not only is it a Saturday, but it's the end of a pay period, end of a leave period. It's where if you finish out that last 2 weeks, you not only get paid for the whole month of September salary, but you also earn another leave accrual. So retiring at the end of the month, it's also the end of a leave period. Now you've hit the double winner, right?
Yeah.
You know, it's two good things. And if you can manage to make it the end of the year, the end of the leave period, and the end of the month, man, that's even better. Yeah, but that only happens once every so many years.
Okay. Oh, so that trifecta. But but usually two of those things occur. Isn't
you can
that
get
right?
Two of those things several months every year,
yeah.
Right? There's always a couple of months where they end right at the end of a leave
period.
Do you
know when those trifecta years happen to be? Is one coming up?
Let's take a look, because I happen to have the end of the leave years through 2020. Let's see if there's one coming up.
And the idea here
is probably going to be 2021, actually.
2021,
Because in 2020, the leave year ends on January 5th. So in 2021, it would be the 4th. So a CSRS employee might be able to get that trifecta if they hang around. But I hate to even say that.
Yeah.
Because we'll have somebody out there with 46 years of service who's going to work another six more years.
Work.
But for FERS, it probably won't happen until about 2024.
Okay. Yeah. All right. Well, so, yeah, don't worry
about
it.
Don't start planning that yet.
And this idea of retiring, the best date, if it's December or January, is so important for a couple of reasons, in addition to when you start getting your payment. But you get, and correct me if I'm wrong, you get your unused annual leave. You get paid at the higher level if there happens to be a pay raise going into effect. You get most of that at the higher level.
Yeah, let me give you an example.
Okay.
So let's say that your salary was $60,000 a year, right? Let's just use that. Well, the way you calculate your hourly pay rate is you take your salary and divide it by 2,087 hours, because that's how many work hours are in a year. So if your salary is $60,000 a year, including locality, because your basic pay includes locality pay, that would mean your hourly pay rate's $28.74 an hour. So let's say you're one of those folks who that last year you worked, you didn't take any annual leave. You might have had a few mental health days in there for sick leave, but saved up your annual leave. You had carried over 240 from the year before. So let's say you're December 31st and you have now 440 hours of annual leave in the bank, right? Mm-hmm. You're going to get paid for that. So if I multiply that hourly pay rate by 440, that's $12,649 as a lump sum payment. Now, keep in mind, when you get that payment, it's going to be at least 4 weeks, maybe 6 to 8. So you're going to get it next year, you know, the following year, which means you pay taxes on it next year, too.
Right. Let me stop it right there. Take a short break.
We'll come back to that.
The jackpot. We'll be right back here on federalnewsradio.com, 1500 AM. Welcome back to Your Turn. Mike Causey here. I'm talking with Tammy Flanagan. She is now in private business as a retirement planner and coach and that sort of thing. Tammy, before I rudely interrupted us for a break, you were talking about this lump sum annual leave.
Right.
And the example you gave, somebody making $28.74 an hour who carried over the maximum of 440 hours, $12,600 in lump sum payment.
Yes.
The good news is, you get most of it, and it will be taxed at the in the year where your income is probably down. You may very well be in a lower income tax bracket.
Right. Yeah. So if you're going to be fully retired, like you retire December 31st, and then next year I'm going to be retired. I'm not going back to work. So your income, your taxable income is probably less anyway because you're getting a portion of your salary as your retirement. So adding that $12,000 to your retirement income probably wouldn't be as devastating as adding it to your 11 months of salary from last year, 12 months. Mm-hmm. So tax-wise, it's probably good that you left on December 31st. However, when I give you that number, $12,649 is, you know, for that person, what that would be the gross amount. What's withheld from your lump sum annual leave check is taxes.
Okay.
So you're going to have to consider federal and state level taxes. If you're FERS, FICA, and Medicare tax.
Mm-hmm.
But those are the only withholdings. That's still a lot because you might only end up with 75% of that $12,000. But hey, it's something. But what we were talking about before also was the fact that let's say Congress feels generous that year and they give federal employees a 3% pay increase. Well, now most of that annual leave is going to be worth 3% more.
Okay.
So now what was once 12,000 something now goes above 13,000.
Yeah.
So the way that works is that if you retire at the end of the leave year, they calculate, your payroll office does this before they pay out the lump sum leave check. They say, here's what it would be at your current pay rate, but let's see how much of it would have lasted beyond that pay increase. And you're due that lump sum at the new rate for that excess leave. Now you might get that in two checks.
Okay.
But you'll get it.
The lump sum payment, the lump sum annual leave payment, you usually get that before you get your full retirement
Yeah.
Correct.
Yeah. Let's do a little bit of the timing, because people always want to know, like, how long does it take?
Yeah.
And there's no hard and fast rule. So you can't say, well, if it doesn't come on this date, I'm going to give my congressman a call.
Yeah.
But the way it normally works is that when you know you're going to retire, you want to give your agency a little bit of headway. So I would say for most people, you want to at least give 30 days notice. Mm-hmm. If you're at one of the big organizations like DOD or some big agency, you want to give 60 to 90 days notice, which means you're turning in your application for FERS or civil service retirement 2 to 3 months before you retire. So you give them notice. Your agency can put together this packet of information that they're going to send to OPM, the Office of Personnel Management, who actually processes and pays your benefit. So on the day you separate, you're due another paycheck because all federal employees are paid behind by 2 weeks. So after you retire, let's say you leave December 31st, in January, you'll probably get another full paycheck, and another partial paycheck is December 31st, the middle of a pay period. Now you're still waiting for your lump sum leave, which is the last thing the agency pays you. Some agencies will skip a pay period before they pay out that lump sum leave just to make sure you've turned in your cell phone and any other equipment that they might have to deduct from that lump sum leave check that you didn't return. So that you'll get that usually 6 weeks, sometimes as long as 8 weeks after retirement. Now you're waiting for that first retirement check, which is really due February 1st if you left on December 31st. Because just like employees are paid 2 weeks behind, retirees are paid a month behind. So that February 1st check is your January payment. However, because OPM is probably just now receiving your case from your agency, because they can't really send it out till after you've left, they're going to put you in what's called interim pay or interim retired status, which means they're going to get the claim, they're going to take a look at it, they're going to kind of do a triage to see what's all there. Like, does this person have a former spouse and has to go to the court order section? Or is this a law enforcement retiree where we have to give it to a specialist who does law enforcement? So they see how complicated, see what else they have to do with it. In some rare occasions, they'll get it on time and pay the first check on time and you're fully adjudicated 1 month. But for most people, we're going to get interim pay on February, March, maybe even April. And then perhaps the following month is when they pay you back what they owe you. Everything's done. So for most people, it's a 60 to 90 day process.
Right. And we've seen some cases, too, that went as much as a year.
Oh, or longer. You know, if there's a problem or something's missing.
Yeah.
Or there's just some reason that it's taking a part-time or civil service offset. Those
can
take
longer.
I think
a lot of people, I've noticed this with reporters covering this, a lot of the younger ones in particular think it's all computerized. We can do it in minutes. It's not computerized. It's still largely a paper production, because you're talking about careers that go back 20 and 30 and 40 and 50, in some cases, years.
Right. Yeah, so, the application, although you can fill out your application online, you have to print it, sign it with an ink pen, and turn it in. It's a paper application.
Right, and then they have OPM. A box somewhere in Boyers, Pennsylvania, or the basement of your agency. And if you've changed jobs a lot, if you were a man or a woman who had a break in service, if you had military service during that time, it's all got to add up.
Yeah, it was funny. A few years ago, OPM had sent up, they call them benefit letters, to the agencies to explain to them, you know, what you need to do and give them policy information. So one came out maybe in 2012 that was, it was called Submitting a Healthy Retirement Case. And it was instructions of how to put that stack of papers together with the beneficiary forms on this level and the divorce decree and then the application for retirement. And then it said, two-hole punch it on the top. If it's portrait, if it's landscape, two-hole punch it on the left. I'm thinking, man, are we still two-hole punching papers in 2012?
And answer yes.
Yeah, in 2016 we are too.
Yeah, it's extremely complicated situation. Now, every year, and I never know how to answer people, but we'll say, you and I will say, if you're FERS, retire December 31st, if you want to retire at that time, retire December 31st. If you're CSRS, retire January 1st, 2nd, or 3rd. And people will say, yeah, but what about New Year's Day? I mean, is that a big deal?
Yeah, well, like, okay, if we're going to look at the end of 2016, December 31st is a Saturday this year, right? So January 1st, 2nd, and 3rd is Sunday, Monday, Tuesday. And because the holiday falls on a Sunday, you get Monday off. So I would say if you're a CSRS employee, why not retire January 3rd of 2017 if you're going to go out the end of this year, if you're trying to save up that leave? And what that'll get for you is the second, you don't have to come to work because it's a holiday, but you still get paid. Mm-hmm. The third is a work day, so you'll probably come in and clean out your desk, yeah, and everybody else will be on use or lose leave. And then on Tuesday or on Wednesday, the fourth is your first day as a retiree.
Mm-hmm.
So okay, that's hopefully when they get a big snowstorm and they close, yeah, down the government, right?
Yeah.
So,
yeah, and an extra day's pay is an extra day's pay.
That's right. And yeah, it's usually worth a little more than a day of retired pay. So the trade-off is a little bit to the ahead.
Yeah, okay. All right. What are, I guess, the most common mistake that you're aware of that people make when deciding to retire, or is there one?
Following the crowd. And,
okay,
and like, you know, because you retire January 3rd, I'm going to do it because, mm-hmm, you're smart. You got to think about, why are you doing it? Is it because you saved up all that leave, or is it because you're CSRS and you know, so you really want to look at all the variables, because for some people retiring in January, and maybe you live where it snows all the time, that, mm-hmm, could put you into depression,
yeah,
right?
Yeah.
So you might want to retire in the springtime when the flowers are blooming and you have a little easier time to get some traction in retirement. So everybody's going to have a different reason. For some people, it's all about taxes. You know, maybe I don't want to have a big tax burden, or I want to, mm-hmm, put all that money in a thrift plan before I retire. So maybe I'll do mid-year, kind of balance it out between the 6 months of the year. So there's all kinds of reasons why people might choose to retire in March or April or May. And you'll see that too. When you look at the list of people retiring every month, thousands of federal employees retire, 5,000 one month, 8,000 the next. But like you said, the end of the year, you'll see 25,000.
Yeah.
So it does remain a very popular time, but just make sure you're really looking at your own situation and sort that out to figure out, am I going to work a second career? Do I have this worry about transitioning into life after retirement? Am I saving up my leave? You know, what is the motivation for my retirement?
Okay. All right. We need to take a short break here. I'm talking with Tammy Flanagan, a benefits expert, and we'll be right back here on federalnewsradio.com, 1500 AM. Welcome back to Your Turn. I'm talking with Tammy Flanagan, benefits expert, and she does webinars from time to time for the National Active and Retired Federal Employees, and we'll tell you when the next one is coming up, when it's coming up. Tammy, we talking about best dates to retire, but one of the things that frightened me, and I did a column in April of this year, something about, are you one of the 11 percenters? And, you know, question mark. And the answer was, if you are, stop doing that. Stop being it. And 11% is the number of people under the Federal Employees Retirement System who are not contributing to the Thrift Savings Plan.
Yeah.
So they're getting the government 1% match or whatever, but they could get 5 if they put in 5. And it's, I think people don't have a concept of how this works. It's Social Security. It's a reduced civil service benefit, and the Thrift Savings Plan. As we said before, it's estimated the TSP will provide anywhere from 30 to 50 cents of every dollar you have in retirement.
Right.
So you better save. The FERS and the CSRS, the Thrift Savings Plan, is a nice option, and it's something, if they're smart, they do it. But it's not essential to most of them. But for FERS people, it absolutely is, correct?
Right. And a couple of things with the Thrift Savings Plan, benefits to doing so. Like you said, for a new hire or newer employee, I know it's hard, you know, when you start out. I have two sons that are, mm-hmm, kind of getting started in their careers and trying to pay rent and trying to, you know, put gas in the car. And it's difficult when you don't make a huge salary yet to be able to save anything, let alone, you know, 10% of your salary. But the sooner you get used to that, the easier it becomes. And then every time you get a pay raise, you just up it a little,
yeah,
bit until you get up to 10% or even 15% of your salary. So you don't have to do it all at once. But the government right now does you a favor. When, mm-hmm, you're first hired, they're going to withhold 3% of your salary and put it in the TSP for you. And that 3% gets matched dollar for dollar. Plus, you get a 1% automatic contribution. So just by putting in 3, you're really getting the equivalent of 7% of your pay. And if you can quickly get that up to 5%, you'll get a full 5% government contribution, which means now you're putting in 10% of your pay, only giving up 5, and you've reduced your taxable income by 5%. So it doesn't hurt as much. So I always tell new hires, 5% should be your minimum. you know, if at all possible. Now, as time goes on, you start saving 10% or 15% of your pay, or the maximum, which this year is $18,000. And if you're 50 or older, it could be up to $24,000. The benefit to doing that at your later part of your career is not necessarily to catch up for not doing it early, but it's to reduce your taxable income in those final years and to get used to living on less. So people who are doing $24,000 a year shouldn't have any trouble retiring.
Good point. Yeah, good point. What about Roth IRAs within the TSP?
Yeah, the Roth TSP is a little bit different from a Roth IRA.
Okay.
They both have the same first name, but the last name is different. So Roth TSP, first of all, is not restricted by income, because a lot of people say, oh, I can't do a Roth because I make too much money. Well, any federal employee who's actively employed can put money into the Roth TSP. They don't have to be you know, under a certain income level. And the Roth TSP is going to be subject to required distributions when you're 70 and a half and retired, because you have to take required distributions of your TSP account. But if you move that money into a Roth IRA, then you don't have to take required distributions. So there are differences. Those are just two, but they're several differences. So you want to read about that on the TSP's website, tsp.gov, and figure out, and again, you might have to do some tax and financial planning to see if it's better to save pre-tax dollars, which is the traditional thrift, or after-tax dollars that grow tax-free in the Roth TSP.
Yeah, so many people say, you know, taxes are never going to be lower than they are now. They're not going to go down, regardless of what any candidate tells you. They're not going down. So, well, that also shows the advantage of having members of Congress and their staff in the thrift savings plan.
Right.
You know, there's no limit on how much, I mean, there's no salary limit for them, whereas those in the private sector, there definitely is.
There is, yeah.
You know, the other thing about the federal retirement that I think a lot of people, you know, naturally you get something and that's the norm, and you assume it's the norm and that's the way it is everywhere, is I was once working at a place and I was writing about the federal retirement system, and I thought, I'll compare it to ours. And I called our HR office and I said, when's the last time blank employees got a cost of living adjustment? And she said, what's the cost of living adjustment? There's your answer. Never. None. Yeah. So, and federal workers get that. See, FERS employees get a diet cola after a certain level, but they still get it. But the fact that, and this 5% government match is in the thrift savings plan, is huge. 5% tax deferred pay raise.
Yeah, I think sometimes we, you know, because maybe some of us have only worked for the federal government, so we don't have a frame of reference to understand what value these benefits have. Because you'll talk to people in private industry who might get a 3 or 4% match on their savings, but they don't have a pension, let alone a COLA on
That's
a pension.
Right. That's right.
Or you talk to someone else who says, well, when I retire, I have to work until I'm 65 because then Medicare kicks in. Where federal employees can retire at 55 because they get to keep their health insurance for the rest of their life. They don't necessarily have to wait for Medicare benefits to be payable. So there's a lot of advantages to the way our federal retirement system is set up that really makes it very easy for someone to be able to afford to be retired for 20, 30, or 40 years, at least so far. Let's keep that one quiet.
Well, and it could be, I can see the last man standing syndrome, where 10 years down the road, the only people in the United States, the only workers with a defined benefit retirement plan will be federal employees.
Yeah, and I just wonder how much longer that's going to go, because as we've seen over the last 30 years, corporations have slowly but surely done away with that defined benefit pension plan that they used to offer their employees. And many times government kind of follows that, that line of thinking. So we may have our days numbered with FERS. But for right now, definitely it's a three-part system, definitely a very generous system when it stacks up next to CSRS with the same 30-year career.
Yeah.
So it didn't turn out as a nightmare as many people thought it would.
Right. And it also, it was kind of inevitable. They could not have gone on financing this, the CSRS system for future workers. And they've already done some prospective changes, people joining the FERS system. I think there's three tiers now, the, what they pay into it.
That's right.
And no reason it couldn't be a fourth or just eliminate it.
Or they've talked about raising the contribution for all employees, even those hired before 2013. So yeah, Congress always has civil service benefits on the radar, but luckily, because of organizations like NARF and other groups that lobby Congress and show the benefits that federal employees have and how they've earned those benefits, hopefully most of those negative changes won't happen. And maybe we'll even see some improvements in years to come.
Yeah. Well, I think sometimes some federal workers, they resent the politicians because the politicians beat up on bureaucrats. You know, they run against Washington. But that said, it's good to have Congress in the fold because, mm-hmm. and I thought, you know, that this may be a bad omen that when Congress got out of the federal employee health benefits program, you know, they're in a, mm-hmm. the D.C. exchange now right. or something. Well, half the members are millionaires, so not a problem for mm-hmm. them. But now they don't have a dog in that fight, if you will. They don't have a reason to protect the FEHBP. And I think as long as Congress is in the Thrift Savings Plan, you're a very lucky person.
Right. I think we're starting to also see things merging. Like the military now is going to go under the TSP in a few years yeah. with a new retirement version. It's kind of like FERS in a way. And we're starting to see, you know, private sector plans and the Congress looking at the health plans that government employees have and kind of using that as a pattern from the FEHB. So we're seeing this kind of homogenous society as far as retirement benefits go. So we're seeing things kind of merge as time goes on. And it'll be interesting to see what the future looks like
yeah.
if we're around there to well, see what happens.
Well, the irony would be if the government, in the end, my last man standing mm-hmm. theory, if the government is the last bastion of the private sector of,
wouldn't that
of
be something?
Corporate America and yep. doing that. Going to take a short break here, talking with Tammy Flanagan. We'll be right back here on federalnewsradio.com, 1500 AM. Welcome back to Your Turn. Mike Causey here, talking with Tammy Flanagan, benefits expert. And Tammy, you're doing, I guess, private counseling now. Can you give us a way people can reach you?
Yeah.
And by the way, it's not free.
No, I do have to pay bills. So, since I've kind of gone into my phased into retirement with my husband, trying to find different ways to use the skills that I have in doing retirement planning. So I'm still teaching for the National Institute of Transition Planning, and that's really what I've always done.
Yeah.
That's always been the way I've made my living over the past 25 years or so. But now I've realized that, you know, moving down to Florida, it's a little harder to come up here to D.C. as often. So I do some personal counseling. It's very limited, but if someone does need some help, this is the same type of help you should be getting from your agency.
Yeah.
The problem is twofold. Number one, your agency probably doesn't have the staff to sit down with you for 6 hours and really,
yeah.
you know, give you all the ins and outs. And number two, they may not have the experience. So if you're looking for someone to give you a second opinion or to help you through that process of transitioning your benefits into retirement, knowing how to fill out the forms, understanding the value of your service, all of those things, that's what a retirement counselor can do. And I do it. A lot of my coworkers and associates do it as well. But you can find me, just Google my name. I'm out there just like you are. Mm-hmm. But I also have a website that's just simply tammyflanagan.com.
Okay. And it's always struck me as interesting that how people will decide to save money. And one thing, you pay the guards at your building, the minimum wage. You pay your babysitter, your most precious commodity. You pay them the minimum amount of money. And if you get somebody as a retirement counselor, you if they say it's $500 an hour or whatever the fee is, they say that's way too much. I mean, this is your life.
Right.
Their life.
And yeah, usually people aren't, I mean, I charge what I think is a fair price because I do, like I said, I spend yeah. typically, when it's all said and done, 5 or 6 hours with each person I've counseled.
So that's a day.
So yeah, it's a fair price for, I don't overcharge yeah. anybody. I just want to make sure that, you know, I have an incentive to do it.
Yeah.
But
and what
fun.
About, do people, you know, you get in your 4 or 5 or 6 hours, charge them accordingly, and then they keep calling back. Is that a problem?
And that's fine. That's not a problem because I want to make sure, if I tell you something that you really understand what I said, because there's a lot of loss in the interpretation or translation. So if you go back home and you talk to your spouse, you go to your coworkers and they tell you one thing and I told you something else, please, you know, come back and let me know what you misunderstood or what might be different. And I'll be happy to provide resources. I answer questions all the time for
yeah.
free. It's kind of my hobby, right?
Uh-huh.
Live and breathe this retirement thing.
Well, and as you said, too, this is not something you pick up in a year or two. It takes years, and you've been through a number of changes seen the FERS program come in, the Thrift Savings Plan being introduced, the changes in the health plan, and a little institutional memory goes a long way.
Right. It's just like they say, you know, somebody with a college education can get hired at a higher level, mm-hmm. or you have equivalent work experience.
Yeah.
Well, I've got that equivalent yeah. work experience that I think is really what makes the service of someone like me, and there's like John Elliott and mm-hmm. many others out there who have the same, makes us valuable to the point where we do remember what changed and when it changed and how yeah. that might affect you. And I think that's something of value to that.
Yeah. And it's important to know why they changed it too. Mm-hmm. You know, not just like, why do they call it the windfall?
Well, right.
That's a pejorative. That's a put down, but mm-hmm. there was a reason for it.
Congress did have methods behind their madness yeah. of doing things. But by today's standards, were those reasoning correct by 2016 standards?
Yeah.
So sometimes laws that change have to be re-amended or readjusted over time.
When you talk to people about retirement, and I know it's different for the law enforcement community, the LEOs, and it's different for air traffic controllers. There are some jobs in government where there's a mandatory retirement.
Absolutely, yeah.
How do you handle that? I mean, obviously yeah. the date is there, but...
It's a different group. It's nice whenever you teach a group of law enforcement officers that's all you have in the group, because their whole outlook is different. Because under law enforcement, let's use that as an example, you can retire generally around age 50. As long mm-hmm. as you have 20 years of law enforcement service, you could actually retire as young as age 50, or even a little younger if you had 25 years as a law enforcement officer. So you're seeing a much younger group of yeah. retirees, and they know that they're going to be separated by the time they're 57. So they generally have about a 7-year window to decide, do I uh-huh. retire at 50 or do I work till I'm mandatory at 57? So some people use the philosophy, I'm going to get out as soon as possible because I'm going to work a second career. I'm
yeah.
much more marketable at 50 than I will be at 57.
Yeah.
But then others might say, I don't want to have a second career. Mm-hmm. This is my career. So I'm going to play it out till the end and have enough that I can just retire and go, you know, have fun or mm-hmm. do something much less strenuous or stressful afterwards. So you see both situations, but it's nice when you can focus on those needs of a younger retiree versus one who might be in their 60s, 70s, or beyond when they retire. It's
yeah.
a whole different idea of what you're looking at.
I would think so many of these people, the skill set they have is valuable. Many of them have top secret security clearances. Mm-hmm. They've got their own health insurance, which is the best in the world. I would think, and security clearances, I would think they'd be very marketable.
They generally are, yeah. And it just depends on what it is they're looking to do, because they can go out in the private sector and do security work. Some of them become entrepreneurs and do consulting work. Others will come back and work in the government under contract basis, you know, be re-employed annuitants. So there's all different avenues that they go. It just depends on how much they want to work and are they looking for long-term or just something short-term.
Okay. A year or so ago, we were all agog about the phased retirement. It's the mouse that roared.
Kind of fizzled out.
Have you heard anything about it?
No, I'm sad about that, because when it came out, I was really excited because I thought, this is great. This is exactly what I want to do, is
yeah.
phase into retirement, because I'm not ready to fully retire. But, you know, my husband's retired, so I want to work less. I want to mm-hmm. kind of ease into it and do different things. And so I thought, this is great. Congress now allows federal employees to do this, where they can go from full time to 20 hours to then retirement. So it's kind of a mental transition and a financial transition. But majority of agencies really haven't latched onto it, because they still haven't kind of saw what's in it for them. You know, the agency
yeah.
wants to make sure it's in our best interest to offer this. There's some out there like EPA who offers it and a few others. But you don't see it widespread, and you don't see too many people doing it.
Yeah. I guess part of it, maybe somebody's waiting for somebody else to go first, but because the agencies do have a lot of leeway, don't they, as far
they
as
do.
How
and
long
then there's
they
other offer. Ways you can transition, because some employees will retire, just go cold turkey, but then they go back to work
mm-hmm.
and make a second income. So for someone who wants to go out and look for that second career, or who has that need for the agency to bring them back as a re-employed annuitant, that might be another way to transition. So it's whenever you don't want to do anything different, you just want to do less of what you're doing and kind of ease into that financial state of being retired. I think that's who it's designed for. But the agencies really haven't promoted it as much as I thought they would.
Yeah. You've known over your career some people who worked a real long time.
Yeah.
How about, tell us about that.
Oh, yeah. I carry a packet of obituaries with me, and people laugh when I do that. But there are some people who have had really interesting careers that are kind of worth talking about. And I know one that you and I knew for years, and I used to read your column just to find out if Millie Parsons is still around.
Where she was, yeah.
Yeah, Millie Parsons was one woman who had worked for the FBI for almost 63 years. So she absolutely worked there longer than she needed to financially, right? It wasn't about the money for Millie, but she was in the front office of the Washington field office. So you can imagine what an exciting position that is to see everybody who comes through that door. And then she retired. She went to live, I think, up at, not Riderwood, but one of the retirement communities in Maryland. She went to live. And you know, not quite as exciting as the front office of the field office. So she stayed on board till she was, I think, almost 90. Wasn't she? Yeah, she was almost 88 years old she was when she retired. Never took an hour of sick leave. So that was kind of her... her eccentricity was never to take any sick leave. So then after she retired, I kept watching the obituaries to find out how long did she get to be retired. Well, I watched those obituaries a long time because she didn't die until she was 99.
She was probably tracking you and me.
That's right. We were watching each other.
I saw an obit in the Post the other day, and I believe the person was 107. And he had retired from the government. He worked a long time, but he'd retired in like 1970.
Wow.
I mean, it was...
So he really got his money's
worth.
Yeah,
yeah, absolutely. So it does happen.
That's right.
If I don't want to go at the end of the year or the beginning of the magic January or December months, if I want to retire mid-year, and as you said, maybe retire in the spring and it's not so depressing or whatnot, how do you figure that?
Yeah, another thing, some people, you know, it's those folks who don't have the 400 hours of leave and have no desire to have that. Some people will look at it from the standpoint, well, if I go out in the spring, March, April, May, maybe the end of June, I can also get one last push into my TSP account. So I can go ahead and fund that, you know, in those 6 months leading up to retirement. I'll just split it up over 6 months instead of a year.
Sure.
Maybe I can also take advantage of my flexible spending account and have my healthcare expenses one last time covered with tax-free dollars. So for tax purposes, some people look at the mid-year as kind of like a good break point in their career to have that first year of retirement. Now, there's some misconceptions because some people will say, well, I want to retire on my anniversary date. You know, that's October 21st, you know, so that's when I'll have my 35 years. There's nothing magic about that, especially when we add the sick leave onto it because it's going to change the date anyway. So you don't have to retire on a specific anniversary. That's nothing to be said for that. Or someone else will say, well, I just got a step increase. So now I got to work another 3 years to get my high three.
Yeah.
Well, if you go by that theory, you'd never retire because you're always going to get some kind of pay increase, hopefully. So
I hear people from time to time say they have more, they make more in retirement than they did working. Is that?
That's true for some people. I've counseled some employees who are very good savers. They live very frugally or at least very conservatively. They're not in debt. They save $24,000 a year in the thrift. And by the time you look at their retirement income, because you can't pay into the thrift after you retire, right? So you're not going to have retirement withheld. You're not going to have Social Security taxes or thrift savings plan withheld. So their net retirement income actually is more, and they're surprised by this because they never thought that would happen, is more than their net pay income.
You know,
yeah, and different expenses as well.
Okay, Tammy Flanagan, thanks for being with us. Fascinating show. Best date to retire. We'll see you next Wednesday, we hope. Have a good week.